Lieutenant Colonel Whitehead glanced up at Benteen when he came into his office. You wanted to see me, Colonel Whitehead?
Yes, thank you, Fred. We have a request that has been approved by General Colby to send troops to the Bighorn Basin in Wyoming Territory. I'm going to ask you to respond to the request with elements of the 9th Cavalry, and I'll leave it to you to decide what the troop makeup would be.
What exactly is the problem?
The request came from a man named Joe Cravens, who is the mayor of Damaris Springs.
Damaris Springs? What, you mean where the hot springs are? I thought that was a geographical location. I had no idea there was a town there.
It isn't on any map that we have, and I'm not certain that it's ever actually been incorporated as a town. However, there are, as I understand, in excess of 300 people living there. Most of them employed in one way or another by Pierre Bellefontaine.
Oh, so then the man calling the shots will be this man Bellefontaine, not Mayor Cravens.
That would be my guess.
How's Bellefontaine going to feel about my colored troops?
What's there to feel? Bellefontaine wants soldiers there to protect him. Your soldiers will be doing that. If he doesn't like it, tell him to protect himself.
That's a good idea. Who are the Indians I'll be dealing with? Brule? Sans Arc? Cheyenne?
Crow.
Crow? Are you serious?
The Crow have a reservation just east of Yellowstone Park on the Meteetse River. The complaint is that they've been killing the prospectors and raiding homesteaders.
Oh, but the Crow've long been our allies. Curly, white man runs them, half yellow face, white swan, bloody knife. They were all with us at Little Bighorn. They were Crow. What would make the Crow go on the warpath against a white man now?
Fred, you know Indians better than I do. In fact, I would say that right now you're probably the most experienced officer in the Army as far as Indian fighting is concerned. You know better than anyone how they get caught up in their cults and rituals. General Colby thinks it's this spirit talking that has them all riled up.
Well, he may be right. I'll get my men ready.
How many companies will you be taking?
I think two will be enough. I just can't believe that the entire Crow Nation is involved. If it is related to spirit talking, it's more than likely going to be just a handful of troublemakers.
After his meeting with Lieutenant Colonel Whitehead, Benteen walked across the parade grounds to the supply room. When he stepped inside, he saw Sergeant Major Moses Coltrane taking an inventory.
Sergeant Major Coltrane.
Coltrane came to attention.
Yes, sir.
How you doing with the inventory?
Doing very well, sir. Thank you. Just about concluded.
Are we missing anything?
Not exactly, sir.
Not exactly? What does that mean?
The Major might remember that we were ordered to turn in some rifles, carbines, and pistols. I had them all packed ready to go out, but Sergeant Depro shipped them instead. So far, I still haven't gotten a receipt from Jefferson Barracks saying they arrived, and until I do, I can't close my property book on them.
I do remember that. Now, don't worry, Sergeant. If something has happened to those weapons, I'll see to it that it will be Depro's fault, not yours.
Benteen looked around the supply room.
Where is Sergeant Depro anyway?
He took a one-week furlough.
1 week? Well, as I understand it, he's from Ohio. He can't get to Ohio and back in 1 week. Where'd he go?
He didn't tell me, sir.
Well, isn't my problem. The reason I came over, Sergeant, is because we've been ordered to the field. I'm going to take 2 troops of the 9th. What I want you to do is get our equipment together for the march.
Yes, sir. Any idea how long you'll be gone, sir?
No, I have no idea how long we'll be gone. We're going up into the Bighorn Basin, and it isn't just an expedition. There's a very strong possibility that we may encounter some fighting. So, I'll want 100 rounds of carbine ammunition and 24 rounds of pistol ammunition per man.
Yes, sir, I'll get right on it.
Oh, and Sergeant, since we're only going to have 2 companies going, I'm going to leave Sergeant Major Wilder here at the post. That means I'll need an acting sergeant major. I'd like you to fill that position.
Yes, sir.
Lee Regret and Sam Davis stood along the river at the base of Jim Mountain in Wyoming Territory as their horses drank.
I don't see him anywhere about.
He'll be here. You know Sergeant Depro as well as I do. You know that when he tells you he's gonna do something, he does it.
Yeah, well, only if he's going to get something out of it for his own self.
Well, he is going to get something. He's going to get his cut of the money.
If there is any money, You ever seen any Indians with money? Did you ever think of that?
You were there when we talked to Mean to his horses. You heard me tell him that we wanted to be paid in gold. He agreed, and that's what we'll be dealing in. What the hell was that?
It sounded like a bird.
Didn't sound like no bird I ever heard.
Davis returned the whistle, and a moment later, a man wearing an army uniform with the stripes of a sergeant walked through the tree line across the river.
Howdy, troopers!
We ain't troopers no more! We done been out of the army for nigh on 2 years!
Hell, Regret, you wasn't no soldier when you was in the army. You wasn't bad though, Davis.
Thank you, Sergeant.
What the hell you sucking up to him for? He can't make me muck out the stables and he can't give you no stripes. Me and him both is out of the army and there ain't nothing you can do to hurt us or help us. Ain't that right, Sergeant D-Pro?
That all depends.
Depends on what?
Whether or not you want the weapons I got.
You got them, Sarge?
Come over here with me and I'll let you take a look.
Regret and Davis waded through the water, then followed Sergeant D-Pro to the other side of a large rock outcropping. There sat an old, weather-beaten wagon, its markings so dim that it was barely identifiable as a one-time army wagon.
Here they are.
Sergeant D-Pro jerked the canvas cover away to reveal 8 closed boxes. Davis pried off the lid from the first box. He picked up one of the rifles and tossed it over to Regret, and picked up another for himself. It was a lever-action rifle, and he pumped the lever as he examined the action.
How many do you have here?
40 Winchester repeaters, 44-40, 55 Springfield 51 caliber breech-loading rifles, and 35 Colt revolvers, 45 caliber. Put another way, enough weapons to start a small war.
Funny you should say that, for that is exactly what we have in mind.
Have you got a buyer?
Yeah, we got a buyer. Mean to his horses.
Mean to his horses? Wait a minute, are you telling me I stole these guns to sell to Injuns? And not just any Injun. You're gonna sell them to Mean to his horses? You can't be serious.
Yeah, we're serious. Why wouldn't we be serious?
D-Pro shook his head.
I don't know it. Mean to his horses is one bad son of a bitch. I just can't believe you sold weapons to him.
Who do you think we'd sell them to? Some squaw somewhere?
No, I guess not. But I'm sure you remember the skirmish we had with Mean to his horses a couple of years ago. He and 50 Braves went off the reservation, and we ran into them at Crazy Woman Creek. That was a fight where Miller, Tucker, and Jimmy Clark was all 3 killed.
Yeah, I remember that.
They captured Jimmy Clark and tortured him that night. We all heard him screaming for 2 or 3 hours before he died. You remember that too, do you?
Yes, of course I remember. Something like that ain't all that easy to forget. So what's your point?
My point is that really the kind of Indian you want to sell these guns to?
I don't care who we sell the guns to, as long as we get paid. And seeing as how you done stole the guns, looks to me like you don't have no choice but to go along with it your own self. When you think about it, you're in this for the money, same as we are.
Yeah, you're right. It don't really make me know never mind what happens to the guns as long as I get paid for them. What price do you think we can get for them?
We've already set the price at $10 apiece, so with what we've got here, I figure that comes about $1,300.
How much will that be for each of us?
$433 each. $1 left over.
Davis looked at D-Pro.
Which is damn near a year's salary for you.
Here's another way we can make some money. I've already got me about 10,000 rounds, all divided up according to caliber. If we don't give the Indians bullets when we sell them the guns, why, we could charge them for the bullets too. Say, maybe a nickel a round, and that would be another $500.
Sounds good to me. How'd you come by the bullets?
When we were told to ship them guns back to Jefferson Barracks, what they also done was ask for the ammunition too. But I hid the bullets away as same as I hid the guns. That means I've got all the ammunition we need.
I'll tell you what. What do you say we just let the Indians play with the guns without bullets for a while? I'm sure they can come up with some on their own, but probably not more than a handful. And all that's gonna do is make them hungry for more.
Ha! They might get so hungry for them bullets that we could fetch a dime apiece for them.
I wouldn't be surprised.
As it so happened, Buffalo Bill Cody arranged to keep several horses at the livery at Damaris Springs. So the day after the meeting with Bellefontaine, Cody, Falcon, and Ingram walked down to the Damaris Corral. I keep horses here so that I have them handy when I come out. It helps that the Damaris Corral is one of the few business establishments in town that Bellefontaine doesn't own. When they stepped into the livery barn, they saw two men putting a wheel on a buckboard. Carly, you sure you know what you're doing? A big man, whose rolled-up sleeves displayed well-developed biceps, turned toward the three men.
More better than you know, I think.
Grabbing a rag to wipe his hands, the big man advanced toward the three. Then a wide smile spread across his face.
Cody, in town I heard you were.
It is. I heard you were in town, you dumb Dutchman. Not in town, I heard you were. That there was no animosity between the two men was indicated by the mutual smiles and a hearty handshake. Gentlemen, this thick-headed Dutchman is Carl Maas, and you are not likely to find a better man anywhere. Carl, this is Falcon McAllister and Prentice Ingram.
Falcon McAllister, yeah, of you I have heard.
Carl first shook Falcon's hand, then Ingram's. When are you going to sell this place and come join my Wild West exhibition? I would put you in charge of all my stock and rolling equipment. I was in Germany 2 months ago. Why, just think, if you had been working for me then, you could have gone back.
And why to the place I left would I want to go back?
Well, that's a good enough question, I suppose. Listen, how about picking out three of my best horses and having them saddled for us?
You're going to look at the site where the town you will build?
Yes. Then we're going to ride through Yellowstone and go on to Cinnabar. I'm going to try out some new cowboys for my show there.
Al! Three of your Cody's best horses you saddle.
Yes, sir, Mr. Moss.
You weren't at the meeting this morning when we talked about the Indian problem.
Oh, there is no Indian problem. I think it is something Bellefontaine wants.
Why would he want that?
I think he wants all the basin for himself so he can build his mine. If there is Indian problem, then all prospectors and homesteaders will not be able to stay. And the Indians, too, will not be able to stay because the army will come in and move them.
Is there that much gold in the valley?
I think there is no gold, but there is much coal. Bellefontaine wants to mine the coal to sell to the railroad. That will make him much money, I think.
Damn! You know, Carl, you may not be as thick-headed as people think. Bellefontaine is making everyone think he is looking for gold. But that is just a ruse. He's been after coal all along.
Yeah, that is what I think.
Al returned with three saddled horses. Ah, thank you, Al. Cody gave the man a generous tip. Then he turned to Falcon and Ingram. Gentlemen, all three are excellent riding horses with strength and endurance. You may choose your mount. By midday, the three riders found themselves on a ridge overlooking the exact site where Cody planned to build his town. One problem in this area is the lack of potable water, which is why I am building on the river. This is Stinking Water River. Dismounting, Cody walked down to the river. But as you can see, he dipped his canteen cup into it. Then he took a drink. The water is as sweet as a good wine. He held the cup out toward Falcon, and Falcon took a drink as well.
It is good water.
But why do they call it Stinking Water River?
It has nothing to do with the water at all. There are several fumaroles about. They give off an odor, rather like rotten eggs. Once we get my town established, I intend to get the name changed to the Shoshone River.
I must confess that the scenery here is beautiful. But this is a very remote and isolated location. It will be very hard for people to get here.
Oh, there is already a railroad to Cinnabar just on the other side of Yellowstone Park. And the Burlington Railroad is planning on building a track from Billings to Denver. I am trying to convince them to bring the track through Cody.
Knowing your power of persuasion, Cody, I bet that you get the job done.
And that will completely destroy the town of Damaris Springs.
Unfortunately, yes.
Unfortunately, my foot. That is your intention.
Well, now, I must confess that it is unlikely this area could support two towns in such close proximity. And if one town is to succeed, I would hope it would be my town.
Nobody can fault you on that.
Cody, did you say we're going through Yellowstone before we get to Cinnabar?
Yes.
But there ain't no east entrance to Yellowstone. Mountains are too high.
There is a pass. It's called Sylvan Pass. I am proposing that they make an entrance using that pass. That would add to the attraction of my town when I get it built.
Sylvan Pass, huh? I don't think I've heard of it.
Well, it's very high. But I'm convinced that with a series of switchbacks, a road could be constructed that would take visitors from my town into the park. And I intend to prove it.
By taking us through it?
Yes. We have a day's ride through Bighorn Basin to the Yellowstone Park. Now, our path will take us close to, but not through, the Crow Indian Village. Now, I have known High Hawk for a long time. We're friends of long standing, and I cannot believe we are in any danger. Nevertheless, it would probably be wise to keep an eye open. The three men were alert for the entire ride, but they didn't see one other person, Indian or white. They camped that night just east of the park. The next morning, they entered Yellowstone by way of Sylvan Pass. Without a road, they had to follow the natural terrain of the mountain, finding enough ground for their horses to get footing as they made a series of switchbacks to enable them to gain altitude. The climb was long and arduous, and soon they were so high that they were actually looking down on the snow-capped peaks of the adjacent mountains. In fact, though it was the middle of June, there were several areas where they actually passed through snow that came up to the horses' knees. Several times they had to dismount and lead the horses, until at last they were at the top of the pass. There they stopped to give themselves and their horses a chance to catch their breath. That was even made harder due to the thinner air at this breathtaking, beautiful elevation, somewhere between 8 and 9,000 feet high. Yellowstone had been established as a national park in 1872. Both Falcon and Cody had been to Yellowstone prior to its establishment as a park, and Cody had been many times there since it became a national park. But Ingram, well, he'd never been, and he took in the park transfixed by the wonders he beheld. Coming down from the pass, they saw travertine terraces, geysers, mud volcanoes, giant hot springs, and the upper and lower falls in what Cody called the Grand Canyon of the Yellowstone Park. At midday, Falcon shot a goose. Ingram started gathering wood, and Cody called out to him.
Where are you going?
I'm gathering wood for a fire so we can cook the goose. You don't want to eat it raw, do you?
No need for that. Let me show you.
After cleaning the goose, Cody tied a long piece of rawhide around the goose's feet, and then he lowered it into one of the boiling cauldrons of the natural hot spring. Because of the pressure, the water is much hotter than normal boiling temperature, so this goose will cook much faster. In less than 10 minutes, Cody pulled the goose from the hot water and then lay it on a fallen tree trunk. Cutting it open showed that the goose was thoroughly cooked through and through.
I wonder if the Indians used to cook their food this way.
Ingram pulled some meat away from the breast and ate it.
No, because of all the hot springs, geysers, mud pots, and sinkholes, the Indians considered this area to be filled with bad medicine.
You have to be careful where you walk here. There are places where the ground looks quite secure, but if you step on it, you will find that it is only a very thin crust, and you can fall through to a boiling cauldron like this one.
Thanks a lot. Now you'll have me scared to death to take a step.
Do like me. Walk behind Cody. If he falls in, we'll know not to step there.
I'll say this, the wonders of this park will never cease to amaze me.
Here's another wonder. Once, many years ago, before this became a park, I came here to hunt bighorn sheep. I saw one, took a perfect aim at him, and fired, but missed. Not only did I miss, the bighorn sheep paid no attention to me. I moved closer and fired again, and I missed again, though I don't know exactly how that could possibly have been so. And what was even more amazing is the fact that the bighorn paid no attention whatever, not even reacting to the sound of the gunshot. I rushed toward the sheep to see what was wrong, and I ran smack dab into a solid glass wall.
A glass wall?
Yes, sir. Well, it wasn't exactly a glass wall. It was more like a glass mountain. Because, believe it or not, that glass mountain was acting just like a telescope. As it turns out, even though that bighorn sheep looked like he was no more than 100 yards away, he was actually 10 miles off. Of course, that mountain isn't here anymore. No, sir. The government found out about it, and they sent folks in here to chop it down and make into field glasses and telescopes for the Army and Navy.
Cody, you've missed your calling. With a tall tale like that, you're the one who should be writing.
After dinner, they continued their sojourn through the park, riding by sheer-sided cliffs that rose 1,000 or more feet straight up, and enjoying the colors from canary to orange to bronze. During their ride through the park, they saw buffalo, elk, deer, and grizzly. One grizzly bear made a few feints toward him, and all three men drew their rifles, but the bear turned and ambled away from them. Within the boundaries of the Yellowstone Park rise the headwaters of the greatest river system in the United States. The Gallatin, Madison, Gardner, Jefferson, and Yellowstone join the Missouri River, which joins the Mississippi to empty into the Gulf of Mexico. The Snake had its head here as well, and it flowed to the Pacific, while the headwaters of the Colorado led to the Gulf of California. Perhaps the greatest promoter of Yellowstone Park was the Northern Pacific Railroad, with its wonderland route to the land of geysers, Yellowstone Park. With colorful brochures and national newspaper advertising, the Northern Pacific brought swarms of visitors per year, discharging them at Livingston, where the Yellowstone tourists would take another train to the depot in Cinnabar. Cinnabar was a town grown specifically to service Yellowstone. On any given day during the summer season, there were many more tourists in town than there were residents. Today, Cinnabar was even more crowded than usual, for a large number of cowboys had gathered to audition for a position with the Buffalo Bill Cody Wild West Exhibition, and an even larger crowd had gathered to watch the performance. As the next train from Livingston arrived in Cinnabar, Falcon, Cody, and Ingram did not know it carried 6 passengers dedicated to one purpose: killing Falcon McAllister, Buffalo Bill Cody, and Preston Ingram. Angus Ebersole, Clay Hawkins, Ike Peters, Jim Dewey, Billy Taylor, and their newest recruit, Ethan Slayton, stepped down from the train. Once out of the train, they waited on the depot platform as their horses were offloaded from the special stock car. Then, they led them over to the cart on which baggage was being loaded. Ebersole turned to the baggage agent.
When our saddles come out, no need to put them on the cart. We'll take them right here.
Are you boys here for the tryouts?
Yeah, we thought we might give it a try.
Well, there's a good bunch of cowboys here to try out. I know a bunch of them myself. So it sure ought to be a good show.
That's what we was figuring. Is there any place to keep our horses?
Well, not really. I mean, being as we're so small, we don't have no livery here as such, but we do have a barn where they keep the horses for the stagecoaches that take the tourists on down into the park. It's run by a fella named Dempsey. If you tell him the Deacus sent you, that's me name, Deacus Smart, well, like as not, he'll let you keep your horses there till you're ready for him.
As they led their horses away, Ebersole turned to Taylor and Slayton.
Taylor, you and Slayton need to hang back a bit. They're sure to recognize you two. I don't think they'll recognize me, Peters, Dewey, or Hawkins, because it was dark the only time he's seen us, and we wasn't right up against the train.
Running Elk and White Bull had been with Mean to his horses now for more than 3 weeks. In that time, Mean to his horses led his warriors out for several raids, but without Running Elk or White Bull. At least 12 other men had joined Mean to His Horse's group, and they had also not been allowed to go on raids.
We will make our own raid. We will show Mean to His Horses that we are warriors with courage and honor.
Do you think that is wise?
Yes. It will be like it was when we were young and hunted together. And when I killed the bear. Do you remember?
I remember when you killed the bear. You saved my life.
Then let us now save the lives of our people.
White Bull turned to the other newcomers.
Hear me! Mean to His Horses thinks that we are not ready to go with him. But I say we can show him we are ready. I am going now to claim coup against the white man. If you are brave of heart, you will go with me.
In an instant, everyone declared their intention to go, all but Running Elk.
Running Elk, will you not go with me?
Running Elk smiled and put his hand on White Bull's shoulder.
I will go with you.
As darkness settled over the impromptu arena that had been set up for the Wild West show tryouts, Buffalo Bill picked up his megaphone and stepped into the arena.
Ladies and gents, and all the cowboys who took part today, this ends today's tryout. I want to thank you all for coming.
He turned the megaphone toward the group of cowboys who participated in the auditions.
Now, if you cowboys will just wait around for a bit, we'll be calling some of you up for interviews.
Ebersole and his team stood casually alongside the bleachers, watching Cody, Ingram, and McAllister as they stood talking in the middle of the arena. Slayton pointed.
Look there. McAllister's leaving. He's the son of a bitch I want the most.
Dilly, you, Slayton, and Taylor follow him. Keep an eye on him and find out where he's going. When you find out, come back and tell us.
How about we just kill him?
No, don't do anything yet. We're going to do this right, so we have to plan everything all out.
Hey, he's going.
Slayton's eyes narrowed.
Come on. I don't intend to let him get white.
At that same moment, some 100 miles away as the crow flies, Sam Davis, Lee Regret, and Sergeant Depro were waiting at Heart Mountain in the Wyoming Territory for their rendezvous with Mean to His Horses. The army wagon Depro used to transport the guns and ammunition up from Fort Keogh was pushed up into a ravine and covered with sagebrush.
Here they come.
They? What do you mean, they? I thought we were dealing with just Mean to His Horses.
There's 5 of them, and each one of them is leading a pack horse. It makes sense when you think about it. There's no way Mean to His Horses could get all those guns back by his own self.
I reckon you're right, but I don't like it.
Bet you'll like spending all that money, though.
Yeah, I like that just fine.
You have guns?
You have gold?
Mean to His Horses threw down 2 bags. Davis opened the bags and dumped the contents out on the ground. They were all $20 gold pieces.
Good Lord!
Give me guns.
They're in the wagon.
Davis pointed to the ravine where the wagon lay, covered with sage.
You're gonna need bullets for them guns, Chief. And that's gonna cost you extra.
Already I give more money than you ask. I will take bullets too.
Not without paying extra, you ain't.
Mean to His Horses was already armed, and now he raised his rifle and pointed it at Depro.
Give me bullets, or I will kill you and take the bullets.
Back off, Depro. The chief is right. There is more money here than we asked for.
All right. Take the bullets. Davis is right. I reckon you've already paid for them.
All the Indians but Mean to His Horses had gathered around the wagon to break open the boxes and pull out the guns. They were shooting dangerous glances at the 3 white men.
Boys, I think we would be smart to ease on out of here while they're busy with those guns.
What about the wagon? We can't leave it here.
Why the hell not?
It's got army markings on it. 6th Cavalry markings. If someone finds it here, they can trace it back to me. I ain't leaving without that wagon.
Depro, take it from me. If you don't leave without the wagon, you won't leave at all. I think them Injuns mean to kill us.
Davis is right, Depro. We need to get out of here now.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea.
The three men slipped off quietly, leading their horses until they were some distance away. Then, mounting, they rode off at a gallop. 1 hour later, after the three divided the money, Depro went back to where he left the wagon. He stood there, watching the fire he had set consume the wagon. With his back to the woods, he didn't notice the dark figures creeping out from the tree line. In Cinnabar, Falcon had not gone far when he realized he was being followed. He altered his route, leaving the main street and choosing the new route, not only to see if he actually was being followed, but also because he saw ahead of him several open lots. One of the lots was filled with cut logs preparatory to building a cabin. If he was being followed, this would be a good place to confront them. When Falcon reached the lot, he stepped off the street and slipped in behind the logs. Pulling his gun, he looked back into the direction from which he'd come. By the light of a full moon and the ambient light of the nearest street lamp, he saw the men following him. He could see their forms, but not their faces. There were three of them, all with drawn pistols. They'd come off the main street and were now walking in the same direction Falcon had taken, pausing for a moment to look around. Evidently, they had not seen him slip behind the logs, and now they were wondering what the hell had happened to him.
What the hell?
Where'd he go, Dewey?
I don't know. One minute he was right in front of us, the next minute he was gone. He just disappeared. Like a haint or something.
McAllister ain't no haint, I can tell you that. When you and the others left me behind back at the train robbery, I got a chance to see him up real close, remember?
Yeah, well, we didn't have no choice. We had to leave you. But we come back to break you out of jail, so you really ain't got no complaint now, have you?
Keep your eyes open. He has to be down here somewhere.
Yes, Slayton, we know he's here somewhere. We all seen him come this way. The question is, where?
Well, wherever he is, I aim to find him. And I aim to kill the son of a bitch.
Ebersol said don't kill him yet.
I don't care what Ebersol said. I say we should kill him. Hell, I should have killed the bastard back in Sheridan when I had the chance.
From what I heard, you didn't have no chance with him back in Sheridan.
Well, that's because he got the drop on me when I wasn't looking. Well, I'm looking now, and I aim to kill him.
Well, I don't know. Maybe we should go back and get Ebersol, Peters, and Hawkins.
No, I think Slayton's right. Ebersol and the others is keeping an eye on Buffalo Bill, and we may not get another chance this good. Besides, there's three of us and only one of McAllister. Just how damn hard can it be for three people to kill one man?
Well, from what I've heard of McAllister, it ain't gonna be easy even with the three of us.
Falcon had learned much about human nature over the years. One constant of the criminal class of humanity seemed to be stupidity. Thanks to their blathering, Falcon knew who he was up against and why. Looking around, Falcon saw a fairly good-sized rock lying on the ground. He picked it up and tossed it toward a rock outcropping.
He's over there, by that rock!
Shoot him! Shoot, son of a bitch!
Falcon was well positioned to pick out his target. The three shooters were clearly visible in the moon's glow, backlit by the street lamp behind them, and illuminated by their own muzzle flashes. They made perfect targets.
Idiot.
Falcon picked one of them off with one shot.
Damn, he's seen us!
Son of a bitch! He ain't by the rocks, he's over there! Kill him! Kill the son of a bitch before he kills us!
Amazingly, the remaining two attackers made no attempt to find cover or to run away. Instead, they stood their ground and continued to shoot at him. A billowing cloud of gun smoke drifted up over the deadly battlefield. Falcon walked out among the fallen assailants, moving cautiously, his pistol at the ready. He needn't have been so cautious. All three of the men were dead. Falcon went to get George and Sherman Canfield, Bill Cody, and Prentice Ingram so he could bring them back to the scene of the shooting. When they returned, George Sherman was carrying a lantern. He held it down low, enabling them to see the faces of the three men Falcon had shot.
Do you know them, Falcon?
I can't say as I know them, but I know the names of two of them. That one is Billy Taylor. Last time we saw him, he was in jail back in Bismarck.
And this is that Slayton fella. Last time we saw him, he was in Sheridan.
I wonder how Taylor got out of jail.
From what I've overheard, this man is one of the ones who attempted to hold up the train. They broke Taylor out of jail.
They broke him out?
Yeah.
That means the rest of them might be here.
That's what I'm thinking.
Within an hour after the shooting, everyone in Cinnabar, well, at least those who were still awake, knew what had happened. Bodies were not embalmed, so the idea was to get them buried as quickly as possible. Because of that, Marv Welch began preparations right away. Welch was not a real undertaker. He was a carpenter, and he had assumed the position of undertaker only because he was able to construct simple wooden coffins. And even though the bodies were not strapped to a board and stood up in front of the hotel, that didn't mean they were not objects of attention. Morbid curiosity caused 20 more people to come out of the night and wander through Marv Welch's carpentry shop to view the bodies. Marv, who had 3 coffins to build, paid no damn attention to his nighttime visitors. Not only did Welch not embalm the bodies, he made no effort to clean them up in any way, so those who came to view them saw them just as they fell. Bloodied from their bullet wounds and smudged with dirt from the ground where they fell. All the while the visitors arrived and departed, Marv Welch continued to saw and hammer together the 3 coffins. 3 of the viewers who came through were Ebersole, Hawkins, and Peters. They stepped back into the street afterwards.
McAllister killed him. He killed all 3 of them.
How'd he do that?
He shot him.
Yeah, I know that. What I mean is, how could one man kill all 3 of them like that? Taylor and Dewey weren't no slouches with a gun. Slayton was supposed to be pretty good.
Slayton was probably just a loudmouth. I wouldn't have brought him at all except for the horses.
Still, McAllister must be awful good to have killed all 3 of them, no?
I'll tell you how he did it. He did it because the damn fools didn't listen to me. I told them just to keep an eye on him until we could come up with a plan.
Yeah, well, what plan can we come up with now? I mean, if McAllister killed all 3 of them, and he's only one man, what are we gonna do now? There's only 3 of us, and when you count Cody and that rider, that makes 3 of them. I'd like it a lot better if the odds was on our side.
Just because someone has a reputation, that doesn't mean he is invincible. Look at Wild Bill Hickok. They say he was just about the deadliest gunfighter of all of them. And how many men did it take to kill him? Just 1.
Yeah, just 1. But from what I heard, the fella that killed him snuck up on him while he was playing cards and shot him in the back.
Front, back, it don't matter. The point I'm making is, Hickok is still dead, ain't he?
Oh, what you're saying is wait until McAllister's playing cards and sneak up behind him?
No. What I'm saying is wait until the son of a bitch goes to sleep, then sneak up on him. He's spending the night in the Cinnabar Hotel. All we gotta do is find out which room it is.
How are we going to do that?
I'm gonna register at the hotel. When I sign the register book, I'll be able to see which room he's in.
After the bodies of the 3 men who tried to kill him were removed, Falcon returned to the hotel. He was always somewhat ill at ease after killing someone, even if they had tried to kill him first. And though it wasn't something he had ever expressed in words, he knew he never wanted to get over that sense of unease. If it ever got to the point to where killing another human being came as easy to him as stepping on a bug, well, he would know that he had lost his soul. He walked over to look out his hotel room window. From here, he had a good view of the main street. The street, scarred with wagon ruts and dotted with horse droppings, formed an X with the track. The railroad station was halfway down the street, but the train had already gone back to Livingston. It would return in mid-morning the next day with another batch of Yellowstone visitors. On the far side of the track, he saw a scattering of buildings, fashioned from log and ripsawed lumber. On this side of the track, the buildings were all commercial, so they were somewhat more substantial. Some had false fronts, and a few were even painted. Right across the street from the hotel stood the Dewey operation. Below him, and next door to the hotel, was the saloon. This would be the first night Falcon had spent in a bed in over a week. And good Lord, he was rather looking forward to it. Walking over to his bed, he hung his pistol bolt on the headboard, loosed the revolver in its holster. He extinguished a lantern, then slipped under the covers. He was asleep within a few minutes. Now, if anyone had asked Falcon what awakened him sometime later from such a sound sleep, he probably wouldn't have been able to explain it. He knew only that in the midst of a deep slumber, a sudden feeling of danger passed over him. A feeling so strong that even as he was awakening, he was slipping his pistol from its holster. The full moon that had served him so well in the empty lot earlier in the night was now in position to send a splash of silver in through the open window. It was that, and the fact that because he'd been sleeping, his eyes were accustomed to the dark, that he could see the door. Falcon didn't stare directly at the door, but looked slightly to the left of it. Now, if asked, he could not tell anyone the scientific reason for that. He knew nothing about visual purple or that the fovea centralis in the exact center of the retina stopped functioning in darkness. Only the rods in the peripheral field of the retina function in darkness, which meant that in order to see in the night, one must use the peripheral field of vision. Falcon watched the doorknob turn slowly. With gun in hand, Falcon slid out of bed, then moved quickly across the room to stand in the far corner opposite of the bed.
Now!
Muzzle flashes like successive streaks of lightning illuminated the room. The intruders fired several shots at the bed, then stopped.
Can I help you boys with something?
What?
He's over there!
What the hell?
Actually, Falcon wasn't over there, because as soon as he had spoken, he had dropped to his knees and crawled quickly back over to his bed. Again, the pistol fired through the door, this time into the corner where Falcon had been. This time, Falcon returned fire, using the flame patterns from the muzzle flashes as his target. Even before Falcon could light his own lantern, he saw a light moving down the hallway toward his room.
Falcon, are you all right?
Yeah, I'm all right.
By now, other guests in the hotel were coming down the hall as well.
Who are you?
Falcon recognized Ingram's voice just outside the door.
I said, who are you? Are you connected with the other three men who tried to kill Mr. McAllister?
I told Ebersole it was a dumb idea. When you run us off from the train robbery, we should have...
Hey, my goodness! Is it always like this out here? George, I won't go home. I won't go back to Baltimore!
We just arrived today. Haven't even seen the park yet.
I don't care. I had no idea the West was this wild. Why, we could have been killed in our beds.
You were never in any danger, madam.
How do you know?
Because these men weren't after you.
Well, he shot them.
I did, ma'am.
By now, Falcon had pulled on a pair of trousers and was standing just inside the door of his room.
Heavens! You shot all three of them?
Yes, ma'am.
But why?
Well, it seemed to be the thing to do at the time.
Oliver Bowman owned the Rocking Bee Ranch. His nearest neighbor and close friend, Doyle Clayton, owned the Lazy Sea. They were small ranchers, but their ranches were productive, and this year between them, they'd be taking over 500 cows to market. In order to market them, they were going to have to drive them north to the railhead at Livingston, Montana Territory. To that end, Doyle Clayton and his wife had been invited over to the Bowmans for supper. They enjoyed a good meal. Then the Claytons' 6-year-old daughter Diane and the Bowmans' 8-year-old son Clyde went into another room to play while the adults remained at the table and talked over coffee. Bowman set his cup down.
We can put our cowboys together and they should be able to handle the drive all right. But I'm thinking that perhaps you and I should go on ahead to scout the best route.
There's only one route, Oliver, and that's to follow the Yellowstone River.
Well, that's what I'm thinking, but I'd like to check it out. Also, we need to make reservations at the railhead up in Livingston.
You're probably right. So when do you want to go?
I was thinking first light, day after tomorrow.
I'll be here.
Oh, Doyle, Oliver, you two be very careful. I just don't like it that the Indians have gotten so bold of late.
Everyone agrees that it's nothing more than a handful of renegades. This is a big country. The odds of us running into any of them are pretty small.
Especially since we won't have the cattle with us the first time. Injuns only attack when they want something. With just the two of us, it's not likely we'll have anything they want.
Oliver, you have a Winchester, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Tell you what. If it'll make the ladies feel any better, we'll both take our Winchesters in addition to our pistols.
Good idea. I'll also bring along an extra box of bullets.
Why is that supposed to make me feel better? If you think you have to carry extra guns, that means you're worried too.
No, dear. Just means we're being careful.
There was a telegraph in the Cinnabar Hotel, so on the morning after the shooting, a call went through to the sheriff and circuit judge in Livingston. They came down to Cinnabar on the morning train to hold a hearing into the shooting incidents in which Falcon had been involved. With eyewitnesses to the shooting in the hotel, it was easy to establish that the gunman had attacked Falcon. And though there were no eyewitnesses to the shooting in the empty lot, the sheriff and the judge listened to Falcon, Cody, and Ingram tell about the train robbery and the incident with Slayton and Sheridan. In addition, a telegram from the city marshal in Bismarck told of Taylor breaking out of jail, and another telegram from the city marshal in Sheridan told of 6 horses stolen, with Slayton as the principal suspect. By extrapolation, the judge declared the shootings to be justifiable and brought no charges against Falcon.
You still asleep in there?
Ingram got up from the table.
Not at all. I was just making some notes.
More entries in your great American novel?
I'll have you know, sir, that it is not a novel. It is a scholarly work of non-fiction.
Oh, is it now? Well, if you want to continue your scholarly work of non-fiction, you'd best get moving. Falcon is seeing to our horses. We're going back a different way.
Not back through Yellowstone?
No, we're going through Dead Indian Pass, and we'll join the Yellowstone River back in Wyoming.
Sounds interesting.
It took Bowman and Clayton half a day to reach the Yellowstone River from their respective ranches. The ride had not been difficult, and was even easier once they reached the river. Here, they had an abundant source of water, and because of the river, there was an abundant source of forage for the cattle. They caught a couple of trout and cooked them over an open fire. That night, they'd roasted rabbit. They could have eaten elk, there were plenty to be taken. But as there were only 2 of them, they didn't want to waste the rest of the meat that they wouldn't be able to eat or store. Clayton turned to Bowman as they bedded down for the night.
I hope I'm not speaking too early. It seems to me like this drive is likely to be pretty easy.
Bowman settled his hat over his eye.
Yeah. I'm thinking the same thing. But just to be safe, let's extinguish the fire. No sense in leaving a beacon for anyone.
White Bull gave the reins of his pony to Running Elk, and then he climbed to the top of the hill. He knew the warrior's secret of lying down behind the crest of the hill so that he couldn't be seen against the skyline. So he lay on his stomach and then sneaked up to the top and peered over. There, on the valley floor beneath him, he saw 2 white men. It was obvious that the whites had no idea they were in danger. It was going to be easy to count coup against them. He smiled, then slithered back down the hill into the ravine where Running Elk and the others were waiting.
Did you see them?
Yes.
How many are there?
There are 2 white men.
Only 2? But we are 13. Where's the honor in 13 attacking 2?
Where is the honor in the whites killing many buffalo and one feather? Where is the honor in attacking white deer and quiet stream? and White Deer's children. Have you forgotten how the blood ran hot in your veins?
No.
We will claim cool on these white men. Then we will show Mean to his horses that the Crow can be as good warriors as the Cheyenne.
When do you attack?
Now. We will follow the ravine around the side of the hill. We will attack them before they suspect our presence.
Falcon, Cody, and Ingram left Cinnabar, traveling across the top of the park, then to cut south, crossing the Montana border back into Wyoming territory. From the lofty heights of Dead Indian Pass, it was just as if they were on top of the world. They could see far down into the valley where the Yellowstone River snaked its way through, and they had a wonderful view of the surrounding mountains, range after range.
You know, I write my Western novels about this land, but I've never really seen it. The scenery here is magnificent. I love the way the light and shadows play upon the mountains and down in the valleys. We don't have anything like this down in Mississippi. I can tell you that for sure.
Look at Falcon. He's as at home here as a mountain goat.
Well, kind of hard to breathe up here, though. I'm getting winded.
That's because you have those little Mississippi lungs. You see how big Falcon's chest is? That's because it is all lung. He has no heart, no liver, nothing there but one big lung.
Cody, after that tall tale about the mountain of a telescopic glass you told the other day, and this wild tale, you have definitely missed your calling. You should give up show business and become a full-time rider.
The life of Honorable William F. Cody, the famous hunter, scout, and guide known as Buffalo Bill. By William F. Cody. How does that sound?
Everyone in America will want to read it. Of that, I am sure.
Huh. I may just give that a thought. Falcon held up his hand.
Hold it.
What do you see?
Look, down there alongside the river.
Is it an Indian?
No, it's a white man.
And what are those clothes he's wearing?
Long johns. He's wearing nothing but his underwear. Let's get down there.
As they drew closer, Cody got a better look at the man. I think I know that man. When they reached Oliver Bowman, they saw that Falcon was right. He was half naked and barefoot. In addition, his eyes were bloodshot, and his swollen feet were leaving bloody footprints in the sand. Oliver, is that you?
Hello, Bill. Fancy meeting you here.
By the time Bowman regained consciousness, Falcon had already started a fire and brewed some coffee. He gave Bowman a cup. Bowman drank it down greedily, not even caring that it was so hot that it burned his lips.
You wouldn't have anything to eat, would you?
Got some milk jerky.
Bowman wolfed down the jerky.
I'm mighty obliged to you. I'm sorry to be putting you folks out like this.
Nonsense. You aren't putting us out.
It's nice of you to say so.
Oliver, what are you doing out here like this?
You mean with Pert and I no clothes on? I thought if I had to swim, it would be easier if I didn't have my clothes. I thought I had my pistol with me. Did you see a pistol?
You were unarmed when we saw you.
Oh, yeah. I reckon I was. I left my pistol with Doyle Clayton. Or was it my rifle? I don't remember now. All I remember was the Injuns.
Indians?
My God, Injuns. We was attacked by Injuns yesterday. Me and Doyle was. He's still up there if he's alive. He took two arrows, I know that. He sent me off to get help. But damn, I hope he's still alive, Bill.
Where is he?
I don't know for sure. He's upriver, that's all I know. Maybe 10 or 20 miles or so.
We'll find him.
Ingram, Mr. Bowman doesn't live too far from here. How about you take him home?
I thought I might come with you two.
Oh, I see. And just leave Mr. Bowman here.
Oh, yeah. I guess you are right.
Bowman began shivering then from the cold.
Now you hear, Mr. Bowman.
Ingram took a blanket from his saddle roll.
Wrap yourself in this. Now how far is it to your place?
10, maybe 12 miles.
Well, climb on up behind me. Keep the blanket wrapped around you and hold on. I'll get you safely home.
I think we should return, White Bull. Already we have lost nearly half our number.
You may return if you wish, but I will stay until I have claimed Ku.
But they are two men. Where's the honor in killing but two men? Especially as they have already killed so many of us.
That is all the more reason we should kill them. There is honor in killing enemy. It matters not how many they may be.
Although Running Elk was opposed to it, he knew he could not abandon White Bull without violating a lifelong friendship. And he knew he couldn't leave the fight without losing face. So Running Elk stayed. Falcon and Cody approached the spot in the river where Bowman told them to look for Clayton. The Indians, according to Bowman's explanation, would be on the east side of the Yellowstone. Falcon and Cody crossed over to the west side as they continued their approach. In this they were lucky, for there was a long, high ridge that ran along the west side of the river, shielding their approach. They rode as close as they could get, then they dismounted and, securing their horses, they continued on foot. With the sound of the outgoing round followed by the lever action of a Winchester, they knew they must be even with Clayton. Falcon and Cody crawled up to the top of the ridge line and looked down. There, they saw Clayton. They saw, too, that he was badly wounded and was moving with great difficulty in order to return fire. He was no longer aiming his shots. He was just merely shooting to let the Indians know that he was still alive.
Clayton!
Clayton looked around, as if not certain he had heard his name called.
Clayton, we're over here, across the river.
Thank God.
Clayton tried to get up.
No, no, stay there. We'll come to you.
Clayton got back down as instructed. Falcon and Cody climbed over the ridge, then ran across the river to join him. The river was deeper than they thought, coming all the way up to their belts. So it slowed them considerably, but they made it across without incident.
Bill, Cody! What are you doing here? I thought you were in New York.
Yeah, I was, but Mr. Bowman told me that you were in trouble, so I asked my friend here to come along, and here we are.
From New York?
Sure, why not?
Well, wherever you came from, I'm damn glad to see you. These engines have been giving me hell.
Looks to me like you sent that one to hell.
Falcon pointed to a dead Indian laying over to one side.
Yeah, he sneaked in last night. I guess he figured I was asleep and he could bash my head in.
There are a couple more out there. I'd say you've put up a pretty good defense.
Yeah, well, between Bowman and me, I'm pretty sure we killed at least four or five of them. Oh, Bowman! My God, he's out there somewhere.
Bowman's safe. He's the one who found us.
Oh, good for him. Ah, I don't reckon I know you, sir.
The name's McAllister, Falcon McAllister.
Damn, I heard of you. I reckon if I can't get the United States Cavalry out here to rescue me, getting Buffalo Bill Cody and Falcon McAllister be the next best thing. That may be even better.
Well, let's see what we got here.
Falcon eased up to the top of the dune where Clayton had taken shelter. Looking out across an open area, he saw a line of Indians. He counted eight.
I see eight. How many were there?
I expect that's about all that's left.
Clayton wriggled up the dune so he too could peer over it with Falcon. Then he pointed.
You see that fella there? The one wearing the buffalo horns?
I see him.
I don't know his name, but he seems to be the leader of them. But no, here's the funny thing. He and one of the others are dressed like Crow. This here fella is Shoshone.
He pointed to the Indian who had tried to sneak up on him last night.
And I know that some of them are Cheyenne. What are the Crow and Shoshone doing fighting with Cheyenne? And against us. I thought we was friendly with the Crow and the Shoshone.
It is a curious thing.
Falcon cocked his rifle, and he aimed it at the Indian who was wearing the buffalo horns.
You can't hit that one from here, and that Indian knows it. He's been strutting back and forth all day out there, just rubbing it in that he's out of range.
Falcon's answer was to squeeze the trigger of his rifle. The Indian stiffened. Then one arm went up as he fell from his horse. The rest of the Indians, seeing their leader fall, turned and galloped back into the trees.
Damn! That was one hell of a shot!
Let's get you home.